Today is first day Shlichut, at least for the Ashkenazim. The Svadim already have been involved since Rosh Chodesh Elul. Today is Sunday, the 29th of August, 2021. And I want to say hello to everyone honoring me with their presence on the screen. Last week we finished out a tshuva that we began last term. And I need not tell you the whole question of how we relate to non-Jews. It's a world of material. Regarding the Kloisenberger Rebbe, who I quoted, I just want to make some minor corrections. I spoke about his life rather quickly, and I said Jersey City. That simply was a slip of the tongue. It's Union City. Those of you familiar with New Jersey, Jersey City is closer to Newark. Union City is further north. It's next to Secaucus, if I recall. I knew the area quite well. I lived in Maplewood, which was further south. We were a little bit south of Newark, actually. But it was to Union City that the Kloisenberger Rebbe moved. That's a correction. Otherwise, I just want to mention, I spoke very quickly, but he established, he moved out of Williamsburg already, I believe, was as early as the late 50s. Rabbi Grunstein says 58, and it was 1960 that the Kloisenberger Rebbe himself moved there. One of the reasons he moved out, and that I did not mention, but I see already people know about it, was Kvod Hashem Haste Dava. By the late 50s, Satmar was very powerful, and I need not tell you that having something like the Kloisenberger Rebbe in Williamsburg was not exactly to Satmar's liking. They were worlds apart in ideology, and there were incidents there later. You all know what happened with Chabad and Satmar. So that may be one of the main reasons why they moved out. What remains today, I understand, is very little. That the centers remain in Williamsburg, and as far as Muncie, Kloisenberg, and of course Israel, Netanya, Kiryat Sanz. That's what remains today. I understand there's a bit of an overflow in Jersey City, and as I recall correctly, one of the terrible terrorist incidents in the last year or two took place in a Shomer Shabbos Hasidic Makolet in Jersey City. So the other, not the correction, but I just want to show you how my mind was correct, and I was struggling because this was a sideshow. It had really very little to do with what we were talking about last week. But as part of the sideshow, I mentioned that the Kloisenberger Rebbe lost 10 or 11 children. I was right, it's 10 and 11, so you'll wonder what I'm talking about. Lo aleinu, during the Holocaust, he lost 10 children. One child survived, but like so many others, the child died right after. They were freed by the troops, the Allied troops, and the child died right afterwards. And this, you know, was a part of the great tragedy. Children, elderly people, they survived, but they didn't survive. The Kloisenberger Rebbe didn't even know that this child survived. And when he found out, all 11 were dead. So whether you say he lost 10 or 11 children, both numbers are correct, but I'll stick to 11. Let's not give the Nazis any leeway. Also on the Kloisenberger, what I spoke about with the Six-Day War, those of you who lived it, it was sad, it broke the heart that he came back. I remember living it, and I remember what he said, and I saw it again in the early 90s in Bayit Vagan and YU Graduate, and when they heard the sirens, he had a heart attack in the 90s. The Kloisenberger Rebbe couldn't handle it, went back to the States. And this is part of our Geschichte, what we've gone through, the saga of the Torah people, the Jewish people. All right, that's in relation to last week. The other part of the shiur last week was not about picking up a non-Jewish woman. What about if a Jewish woman falls? Do you pick her up? And there, of course, Rav Menashe Klein was much more lenient. He didn't have the attitude that they deserve to die, that they're chayav mitah. Everything we spoke about with the Sheva Mitzvot. And I went into the whole question of shaking hands with women, the Rambam, Taiva, Beli Taiva, Shlomo Lekalbach. So I received an email from a wonderful student who doesn't want to be identified here. He's second generation. His father, Chassidish Jew, survived the Holocaust and raised children with love of Chassidus far from Brooklyn. And when we spoke about the Yekesher Rabbanim, and if a woman offered her your hand, remember the story I told you with Mori Urebi, Rav Soloveitchik, and Mrs. Pearl Cotton. I lived that story. I have no idea how much it affected me, Bishat Maisa, to see her crying. And the Yekes Taka were Mekil. All right, I said what I said last week. Don't take me out of context. Depends who, when, where, what the circumstances are. But this Talmud wrote to me that in his community, there was a well-respected Rav, a Talmud of Pressburg, that's the Chatam Sofer, not exactly Kalei Dat. And at this Talmud of mine's brother's Chasana, they had a mitzvah dance, these Chassidic Jews. My father was called up to dance the mitzvah dance, and he used the gatel to dance in front of the Kala, his new daughter-in-law. This respective Pressburg Rav came over to him and took the gatel away. He said, you can hold it. In other words, he was saying, what are you, to have taiva, it's a mitzvah tans. And he wanted this Talmud's father to dance holding the kala's hand. My father, I presume, did not want to disrespect the Rav, held on to the kala's arm, which was covered to the wrist. So, all right, it's a fascinating story, and you can draw your own halachic conclusions. Halacha l'maisa, I need not tell you, those of you who know me teaching Torah for the last 60 years, particularly in the modern world, in the so-called progressive world, what I call the world of Aveda Zara, kol hamachmir hareza meshubach. We'll leave it at that. All right. Now I have to tell you this next question that I'm dealing with. There is so much material in here, and perhaps this is the uniqueness of what we're teaching in this particular class that's been ongoing since 78. An ounce of Barak, right? Am I right? Barak, you know, someone would just look at the tshuva and he'd say, well, all right, it's 3 pages. And he can go through it quickly, give you the question, and give you the answer. In this tshuva, I could lecture for about 3 years, just on the sources touched upon. As a matter of fact, there's a source here that I did lecture upon for at least a year and a half. So this is quite a tshuva, but let's begin at the beginning. You all understand I had a Brit Mila, what was it? 1937, December, according to my calculations, December 10th. And at that Brit Mila, my parents gave me the name Aaron Yitzchak. I still have the certificate for my Brit Mila. The Mohalim used to give out a certificate. I don't know if they do it today. If Howie Zeif is listening, he can give us an answer. Zeif the Knife. He's a Mohel. So that was, of course, my Hebrew name. Did I ever use Aaron Yitzchak? Of course, when you're a little kid growing up in an assimilating atmosphere in the Bronx, I don't ever recall using Aaron Yitzchak. But the name I did use was Arnold Edward, and everyone knew me as Arnie. Now, Arnold Edward is a nice Gentile name. My parents have my next brother, Levy. No one even knows his name is Leonard Earl. My kid brother, who is Steve, he taka is in Ivrit, is Simcha Daniel, in English, Stephen Douglas. All right, the Douglas, Earl, Edward, wow, these are real non-Jewish names. are you allowed to use non-Jewish names? Now, this question comes up in modern times and at the end of the Rishonic period, and you're going to find sources in the Gemara, and there's no question that if we're living in a ghetto, I don't believe in Mea Shearim, or today, who knows already, there's no ghetto, everyone is exposed to the outside world. But if you're living in a ghettoized situation, there's no question you're not going to wander in with names like Arnold, etc. But whenever the Jew interacted beyond the ghetto with the bigger world, time and again we see that he was affected by this interaction, that it's not just his dress that we've spoken about, but even the very names that the Jew was given, at many times these were totally non-Jewish names. Now in modern times, and by the way, all these sources that I'm quoting, let me give the tshuva I'm referring to. Chelik Dalet, this is Mishnah Halachot, Chelik Dalet, Siman Kuf Yud Dalet, 114. Jack, check it out, and if I'm misquoting, let me know immediately. If I'm, you know, the number, but this is easy to read, it's Dalet. Hey Chet, you always have a problem. And in modern times, he quotes right away the Maharam Shik. The Maharam Shik, I think you recognize the name. I can tell you that most people I've met in life with the last name Shik are descendants of the Maharam Shik. The Maharam Shik was a Talmud Mufak of the Tam Sofer. You're talking about the Austro-Hungarian area. And Gadol Mirabim Shemo, Posek Mufak, quoted by anyone who deals with Shelet and Shuvat, you're going to have to quote the Maharam Shik. Now, you got to remember as well, think at the time that the Maharam Shik was living. The Maharam Shik is living, we're talking the 19th century. You're talking at a time when in that area, the 1800s, the full impact what had happened in Germany was spreading. The Enlightenment begins in Germany. And it's we suffer from it until today. Moses Mendelssohn comes out of the ghetto. Moses Mendelssohn, as you know, after hearing me speak about him so many times, is a great-grandson of Rabbi Moshe Isserles. He's named for his great-grandfather, the Ramah. And Moshe Mendelssohn died a frum Jew, lived as a frum Jew. His wife covered her hair. Anyone who tells you Moshe Mendelssohn was not frum is just giving you art scroll history. He was 100%, even we have memoir literature where he breaks off conversations, it's Erev Shabbos, he has to go to shul. You see, he was totally committed. But he wanted to live outside the ghetto. He was not any different than almost everyone listening to me, whether you're a YU person or a Chabad person or learning in Lakewood or a Gerer Chassid or a Square Chassid. Willy-nilly, we all live within and without. That is the modern world. That is reality today. It's all the more so with the computer. It's turned the world into a little village. So Mendelssohn, overwhelming. I believe only one grandson died still as a Jew, and not one great-grandson died as a Jew. And I think I told you one of the most moving moments in the history of the State of Israel is when Israel established relations with Germany. So in the first delegation, there was someone, what they call a cultural attaché to the German delegation. I believe his name is Barthodi. It can be checked out. And the Israeli counterpart looked at him and saw his name and said, "You're a descendant." And he said, "Yes, I'm a direct descendant of Moshe Mendelssohn, a Goy Gomor. The only thing going for him that he didn't kill Jews during the Holocaust, okay? They were very makpid that in the original legation, it should only be Germans who absolutely that were not involved in killing Jews during the Holocaust. So at this time you can understand, and this takes us to the whole question of ghettoization. How far can we go? And let me take myself as a poor example or a good example, whichever way you want to look at it. Yibadel minachayim lechayim. Look at the Baruch Lichtenstein. And I say the world is not a world since Rabarin is not here, but all right, that's my feelings of the course of the way I grew up. What about us looks Jewish? We are a kippah? Fine. Atzitzit, Aaron Dafka wore his tzitzit out. They were not out, but out around the buckles of his pants. Rabarin wore tzitzit out. I don't believe the Rav did. I know I grew up, maybe one or two people in all of YU wore tzitzit out. But I don't want to go into it now. Believe me, I think I know what I'm doing. There's a famous Mishnah Brura there. If the king gave you a medal, I don't believe if the king gave me a medal, I'd walk around with the medal on my shirt. But I do have to say that Yomo should be wearing his tzitzit out, nice, large, showing. Why? Do you know why? Let me tell you, Rabbi Beita, it's very simple. Yomo comes from Russia. In Russia, on Sunday, the day they had off, at least this was under the communists, Malka and I were overwhelmed. People would be walking, looking like intelligent people, their whole chest covered with medals. Sunday, you went to the theater, you went to the Bolshoi, your whole chest covered with medals, all right? Yomo, if you come from Kiev, Ukraine, Soviet Russia, you would wear your medals. You have to wear your tzitzit out. But all right, whatever it is. On the other hand, take a look. Is this good? Rakefet walks around, no beard, no payas. If he put, all right, I never take off my kippah, so I put a, that's a different story. I don't say you're chayav never to take off your kippah, but I put a baseball cap over my kippah. No, do I look Jewish? You can assimilate, you get lost, you go to university, you go to work. This is our tremendous problem. The Litvisha world felt they could fight it by learning, all right, I'm a Litvak and I have to agree. And David Goldis, who knows me so many decades, and I think, Mark Wiener, you even know me more. You're right, you were already in the 70s, my Talmud, early 70s. And I think if you know Shas and Paiskim, that is a block, that is a buffer zone against intermarriage and assimilating. But nevertheless, the Hasidim and a good deal of the Torah world, we don't have to go further than Hasidim. Look at Lakewood, look at Mir, look at Hebron. I once saw a group of Hebron fellas, maybe 100, walking. They were going to a lower lane of a Levaya in Shari Chesed. And I was driving home from Gross. If you could, from the back, it looked like a herd. There was no difference in dress. Everyone looked exactly the same. Black, white, black, white, black hat. Look at Mir, look at Lakewood. I often wonder when you put your hat down, how do you know you're picking up your hat? There are 10,000 hats looking exactly the same. Then you go Hasidic. So you see, this is what I call the portable ghetto, and it makes sense 100%. Now the Maram Shik, living at this time, living with the challenges, and remember, today we've overcome these challenges. In other words, today we have Machon Lev, and we have YU, and we have so many other institutions, and we have people who are B'nai Torah and PhDs, and we're lawyers, and we're prime ministers. And we can, the prime minister can daven with tefillin, and his picture goes all over the world. Baruch Hashem, we're able to live in the big world and retain our small world simultaneously. But at the Maram Shik's time, it was better than Mendelssohn. But nevertheless, Rabim Chalalim Hipila, And the Maharam Shit gets this very question, and he absolutely asks giving a non-Jewish name. 100%. And he refers, I'll quote it again, this is crucial. We quoted it last year, we'll quote it again. Look up Hilchat Chukat Ha'ovdei Chachamim Yoredeya Siman Kuf Ayin Chet. Siman Aleph. And Ein Halchim B'Chukat Ha'ovdei Chachamim Lo Yilbash Malbush HaMiyuchad Lahem. And the Rosh Shulchan Aruch goes on, you're not allowed to wear clothes which is specifically non-Jewish. You're not allowed to take a haircut which is specifically non-Jewish. And we're not allowed to emulate them in the basic activities of life. And you look into the Ramah, and you see, the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah Paskin, very simply, it is best to be completely different from the Gentiles, the way we act, above all, the way we dress. Now, you look in, and here's the famous Marik, the Ramah quotes it, and you can look into the Taz and the Shach. What's wrong with Gentile clothes? So, of course, that's the discussion, that if the Gentile clothes is universal, there's nothing wrong with it. What's wrong with Gentile clothes is when it has idolatrous overtones or when it's pritzut. Now, I need not tell you in the world in which we live today what on this summer with Netflix and Unorthodox and that lady, Julia, I think her name Julia Hart, if it registered with me, wow, did she get publicity? And there's a lot to talk about. This, it could be, no one can be blamed here because she was born in Moscow. Her parents became Balei Tshuva. Her parents became semi-Charedim, I gather. They moved to Muncie from Texas. Kol hakavod to them. She went to Beis Yaakov. Food for thought. Maybe if Julia had gone to Stern College, we wouldn't have Netflix dancing on her head. But you see the way the lady talks, the modern world, the clothes, the design, the women that go semi-nude. I mean, it's beyond comprehension. What kind of world is this? Monkeys go nude, animals go nude, cows go nude. But human dignity. So there's no question in my mind that a bikini is absolutely, totally forbidden. That's pritzot. The Marik and the Shach, the Taz, you'll see the Nosei Kalim discuss, and we've hit upon this before, red. Are you allowed to wear red? It seems that red at that time was pritzot. I don't know. It's an interesting question. I would say if it's not a very sharp red that calls attention, why is red any different than blue and yellow and gray and black? I don't know. It's an interesting question. I can't, I'm not the one to paskin it. You need someone with a big yetzahara. Kol shegadol mechabero, yitzro gadol mechabero. You need someone with a big, big lamdan. Let him paskin. But you look into the Shach, and he says openly, Sifkat and Gimel, that Ein derech atznuim liyot adumim b'levusham v'tzeba hashachol hu derech tzniut v'hachna'a u'kudi amrinen mishe yitzro mitgabra olav yubash chorim v'yitatev chorim v'chulu. All right, there's something to be said. This is maybe very well be why the Haredi world has chosen black. I personally will never wear black if I have a choice, because I don't like the concept of black. Mishi Yitzro Mitkaber Alav. My own personal life has been abhorred any reproach. So I don't have to wear black. I don't, I can't, I can't comprehend the Torah Jew, Yirei Shamayim, but all right, I live in a world where I saw tzaddikim and I emulate tzaddikim, and I have Talmidim who are tzaddikim, so maybe I'm not part of that big world out there that has Yetzer Hara, etc. But it's a very fascinating question. And the Maram Shik says very simply that go back to the Shulchan Aruch. Ein holchim b'chukatakim lo medabim lehem. And if this is the case, alachat kama v'kama, we cannot give our names to children that are goyish names. What makes you more sound like a goy than Arnold? And my wife gives it to me when she thinks I did something that she doesn't agree with. She calls me Benedict Arnold. All right, there you have it. She doesn't say Aaron or Yitzchak. It's Benedict Arnold, oh boy. So there's nothing more goyish than naming someone Arnold, Leonard, etc., Douglas, etc. Okay, that's one source. The Maram Shik and the Reb Menashe Klein take this source and it's major. And here I'm quoting the Sefer HaChinuch. The Sefer HaChinuch is it's one of the finest svarim you can ever learn with a teenager. I'll tell you why. It's not just halacha. He gives philosophy behind the halacha. And this is a Rishon, Rabbi Aaron Batzalon, I'm not even certain who the author is, but they say more or less Rabbi Aaron Batzalon. Okay, it's a Rishon. With all that has been written, I need not tell you, the latest tradition and the latest Chakira, whatever, or the latest Torah Mada journal, so much ink is being spilled. The reasons, Tamei HaMitzvot, how do we influence, what is Torah philosophy about? And I tell you, I have found that nothing equals the simplicity and the beauty of the Sefer HaChinuch. And now, take Mitzvah Bet. Mitzvah Bet, and I have to be honest with you, I have quoted this Chinuch endless times. You have a Brit Mila, it's Mitzvah Mila, the second Mitzvah. The first Mitzvah is Piyu V'Rivya, and the second Mitzvah that the Chinuch has is Mila. And Mishoshe Mitzvah Zu, what is the source of the Mitzvah? And look what he says. Sheratz Hashem Yitbarach Lekpoa Ba'amma Shehivdil Liyot Nikral Shmo Ot Kavua B'Gufam Lahavdilam Mishaha Amim B'Tzurat Gufam Kamo Sheheim Muvdalim Mehem Mitzurat Nafshotam Hashem Motza'am Umova'am Einena Shaveh V'nikba hevdel begulat hazahav lefi shohu siba lekiyam hamin. Very, very powerful. That the whole concept of Brit Mila is that we should look different, be different, know that we have to be different. We are not Gentiles, we are Jews. And Dafka, why the Brit Mila in this vital organ? Because that is the source of mankind. Out of that comes children, prua revu. Out of that comes continuity. And this is why we have Brit Mila. And you all know we've paid a very heavy price for Brit Mila. People who were circumcised, Hitler could tell in a minute, if you're a Jew, if you're not a Jew, you're machshmam v'zichram on the Nazis. I can tell you after the war, you all know from the Baal Tshuva movement, you read some of the literature, Jew after Jew came out of the Holocaust and refused to circumcise his children. And many of these kids later came back, discovered their roots, who they are, and later in life, in their teens, in their 20s, underwent circumcision because they wanted to be part of the Jewish people. But you understand the parents who survived. They were yesh v'yesh. We spoke about it many times. But very powerful Sefer HaChinuch. Now, I just want to go one step further on the Sefer HaChinuch. Those of you that are going to be Dashanim, Rabbanim, fathers, grandfathers, great-grandfathers, and have to speak at a Brit Milah, there's a second half where the Sefer HaChinuch continues that, why do you need a Brit Milah? If a Brit Milah completes the person, why didn't God complete the person to begin with? And here, the Sefer HaChinuch, I think, is overwhelming. V'ratza liyot hashlamal yedei adam v'lo baro shalem min betem li'moz leilov ki kasheh tashlum tzurat gufal yado kein biyado lahashlim tzurat nefesh behechshe pu'ulatav. And wow, that is beautiful. God is telling us, it's up to you to complete my work. And just as you complete your body, you can complete your soul. Life is an ongoing process to finish the creation. And this fits right in with the Rav, if you're familiar with Ish Halakha, Milu et haaretz v'kivshuha, why the world is imperfect. God leaves men with a challenge. I've given you this much of the world. Finish it out. Perfect it. Conquer illness. Conquer disease. Come up with new inventions. I need not tell you, in my lifetime, the computerization, it's like I'm being forced out of the world here. Everyone's walking with a hand on a little phone, and they're looking, and it turns into a map, and it guides them where to walk, where to drive. It's beyond comprehension. Now I see in Israel, new supermarkets are introducing wagons where the only way you get it out is computerization. You put it back in, computerization. Ribbono shel Olam. Ah, you can ask one simple question. What about women? Women don't have a Brit Milah. New gentlemen, you're missing lectures I gave decades ago on sex and marriage. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Chafet, ain't a corrected Brit Ela Shemisa Sokli. A woman is dafka, left incomplete. You don't do a Brit Milah on her. She has a membrane. It's exactly like a male being born with a membrane. But that membrane is removed by ha'eshet ne'urim, by her husband, by her ba'al ne'urim. It's a secret moment in life that binds two strangers together, and they become one unit. And that's a message that the world needs so desperately today, when sex has become a cheap commodity. As Rakefet has said many times, they've taken the sex out of sex. Oh, would we have better marriages and loyalty and devotion and consideration. And look at the Rambam in Hilchot Ishut, Perek Tetvav, Halachot Yutet and Chaf, and you'll understand, yes, a woman has a Brit Milah, but it has different specifications than a man's Brit Milah. But be it as it may, you with me? It's a powerful chinuch. With all that's been written in the subsequent 1,000 years since the Sefer HaChinuch is written, I don't think anyone has said it any better and more concisely than Reb Aaron, I believe he's a Kohen, Milunel, Sefer HaChinuch, what a Sefer. Now, but this becomes very important. How do you use a name? Aaron, how do you use a Goyish name? Volodymyr. How do you use all these different names, Jews, depending where they come from, where they were raised, what culture, what language? And here we have to go out of our way to separate ourselves. And there's nothing more enticing, endearing, nothing more that breaks barriers than Arnold. Ribbono shel Olam, how do you use this name? And the Maram Shik, 100% Asa. Black and white. Black and white. Okay. And you can understand him in the context of where he lived, when he lived. Now, there's one problem with all this. You want to be machmir, you want to be stringent, fine. But ta'asa, using Gentile names, it's an open Gemara, which no matter, and there's a lot, you can take this Gemara and spend a week on it. What's exactly the pshat? One thing is absolutely clear from the Gemara. Jews used Gentile names, and they were not rebuked, they were not reprimanded, they were accepted. It was taken as a fact of life. We dress like Gentiles, we all wear pants, we all wear shirts. We all have Gentile names, no problem. Gemara and Gittin, Daf Yud Amid Bet. And just let me elaborate for a moment. You all know my daughter, my eldest daughter made history. She was the first lady since Matan Torah to pass all the exams in Eben Ezra and Chayshin Mishpat and get Hasmacha from the chief rabbinate to be a, what they call a rabbinic lawyer, a Toenet Rabbani in proper Hebrew. How do you say that in English? They call it a female rabbinic pleader, etc. All right, she was the first, and it turned into, I met Avot Beitin, they hugged me, kissed me, they said we were so frightened when this was forced upon us. And they remember my daughter saying she's not a feminist, she works totally within the sphere of halacha to help her clients. And more or less, most Toanot are totally within the sphere of halacha, they are Kiddush Hashem. As a matter of fact, before they had Toanot, any lady lawyer could appear. Any lawyer could appear in Beit Din, male or female. And at times, females appeared not dressed properly, didn't know what they were talking about. And the Toanot, Baruch Hashem, have Torah education, Yirat Shemayim, and knowledge. So many times I spoke with my daughter about the divorce process. And she told me that the biggest problem in a divorce is the chikur hashemot. That's what it's called. The chikur, I would just say that in English, searching out a mechkar, you got to know who the people are. And again, I'll come back to yours truly. Imagine someone's going to write a get for me. What are you writing the get? Arnold Edward, Aaron Yitzchak, Arnie, Yitzchak Shachar. Remember what I told you last week? I used that name during the summer, and many people didn't identify that Yitzchak Shachar is Aaron Rakefet. But this is a serious question. How much has been written on it? The Mitkaryei HaMechuneh. Barak, do you know about Gittin? You have to write the name and then Mitkaryei VaHaMechuneh. And this is a serious question. And my daughter tells me, when they reach the point of writing a get, everything else is settled. They've had a joint settlement. By the way, a get can be written even without a settlement, the joint settlement on the property. Sometimes the get is written and the joint settlement is in the secular court, and it can be, I know one case where it dragged on, if I'm not mistaken, onto 10 years till there was a settlement. Now, what's funny about that case is that the male party had offered a settlement 5 years earlier that was better than the lady got when it was all over. But lawyers talk to you, we get more, we'll get a percentage, we'll get you more, we'll do this. It's very sad at times. And halavai, again, if you go back to my lectures on sex, marriage, divorce, mourning, it was an important year of lectures, maybe more than a year, in the Kollel, in the Monday class. So I quoted the Midrash to you. We get married in dignity. If we have to get divorced, get divorced in dignity. Don't turn it into a chilul kvod haTorah. And you all know what I'm alluding to. So my daughter tells me the biggest problem is the chikra shemot. And you can imagine you have now Russians, French. You need people helping the Beitin. I know one lady who was paid a full-time salary. She was the Beitin liaison with Russian speakers. She was from Moscow, and she mastered Hebrew perfectly, Balei Tshuva, a very prominent lady, and she was paid a full salary just to help them with Russian names. And you can understand what we're talking about. Now, the Gemara that I'm talking about is Daf Yud Amid Bet. And the Gemara is dealing, basically, there are two problems here. The names in the get and the names of the Edim. And if imagine you get a get with total non-Jewish names. And then you get a get Edim sign totally non-Jewish names. All right, Edim sign non-Jewish names. You know the whole sigur. Ede Mesira Kate, Ede Chatima Kate. What makes a get? Is it the names in the get? Or is it the Edim on the get when is it the Edim on the get when they sign Ede Chatima? Or no, you don't even need Ede Chatima. It could only be you have Ede Chatima in case you have to check back later and you have to talk with Edim. You have to know who to talk with. It's the Edim who witnessed the get being given. Ede Mesira Kate. But the names are names of Goyim, total Goyim. Is the get good? Are the names good? This is the Mishnah, Daf Yud Amid Bet, Gittin, Kol Hashtarot Ha'olim B'Arka'ot Shalo B'Kachavim, Af Al Pi Shechot Mechem Ov De'Kachavim, Kisherim, Chutz Mei Gittin Nashim V'Shechrei Avadim. That you get Goyish names, it's done by Gentiles, you can be sure that these documents were done properly. We can depend upon the Gentiles, but not Gittin Nashim V'Shechrei Avadim. And the Gemara has a whole discussion here. Why isn't it good? And if you hold Ede Chatima Kate, we can understand that's what makes the get. It has to be Jews. But if it's Ede Mesira Kate, even if these people signed on are non-Jews, the get would still be good because of the Edim. And then you'll see there's a whole discussion in the Gemara. What does it mean, Gentile names? How do you know Gentile? Maybe these are Jews with Gentile names. Look into the Gemara, Daf Yud Aleph, Amid Aleph. You'll see a whole discussion that Jewish people had Gentile names. And the Gemara uses the word Shemat Muvchakim, that these are certainly like Arnold, the Gentile names they give here, Hormis, Avudina, Bashibatai, Bakidri. Look into Tosfat, and every name he explains where it comes from, and there's total confusion. Are these Jews or are these Gentiles? But you'll see one thing for sure, that Jewish people had totally Gentile names. There's a whole discussion in the Gemara. Yeah, the Gentile names, the people living in outside of Israel, maybe the people in Israel didn't have Gentile names or didn't have as many Gentile names. Whole discussion, whole machleket rishonim. But from this Gemara, you see clearly that Jews had Gentile names. And if this is the case, it's a tremendous proof against the Maram Shik. And Rabbi Menashe Klein is caught in a crossfire. On one hand, he grows up in the Hungarian area. He grows up hearing the name of the Chatam Sofer and hearing the name of the Maram Shik, his student, his Talmud Muvak. And he grows up a semi or total Hasidic Yid, a Lamdan Muvak, but who dresses like a Chassid and acts like a Chassid, and has a shtibble in Borough Park, and today in Borough Park, and in Ramat, one of the Ramats, I think it's, in, it may be Ramat Beit, I believe it is. I was in the shtibble. It's a beautiful, it was built by Elie Wiesel with part of the prize. He got the Nobel Prize. He built the shtibble for his chaver, for the Ungava Rav, in Ramat, in memory of Elie Wiesel's parents. And here he is in this world, and he dresses with a portable ghetto and the Maram Shik. And yet here is an open Gemara which totally negates the Maram Shik's point of view. Okay. He goes a step further. And here we come to the heart of today's lecture. We're touching upon a halachic problem that haunts us in the modern world. And the implications are just endless. What is the problem? The Maram Shik is an achram. We have a great Turkish rishon. Right during the glorious period of Sephardic Jewry. And we're talking here about the Marashtam, Moreinu Harav Shmuel di Medina. I repeat, the Maharashtam, Moreinu Harav Shmuel di Medina. And the Marashtam, Gadol Mirabim Shemo, Sephardic world, has a long tshuva and absolutely paskins that you can have 100% good Jewish people with totally non-Jewish names. And this was particularly so in the Marashtam's era, because you had all the Muranos running away from Spain, running away from Portugal, coming to Turkey, coming to the Sephardic countries, and many of these Anusim, I'm quoting from his tshuva, quoting what Reb Menashe Klein is quoting, Vayelam Sheimat Ki Sheimat Hagayim, V'achar shebau levakeshet Hashem v'yetorato shinu shmam lishmot b'nei Yisrael. And here you have a problem. Doesn't this resemble stories you hear about endless balei tshuva? They were born with totally non-Jewish names. Their parents, even if they're circumcised, many of them were not circumcised by a Brit Mila. It was the doctors who did it in the hospital, raising the whole question of a kid circumcised before the eighth day or a kid circumcised by a non-Jewish doctor. Does he have to have a second circumcision? And all of you know it's impossible. If you're circumcised, you're circumcised. All right? The whole shaila is the shaila of Hatafit Dam Brit. And you have so many stories of Balei Tshuva who do Hatafit Dam Brit in their late teens, in their 20s, in their 30s, etc. And you have so many kids who later in life become Balei Tshuva and they want to take Jewish names. Which name should they take? A boy, a girl? And here, this with the Spanish Portugal emigres, with the Muranos, this she'ela was ma'asim b'chol yom. The Marashtam had to deal with it. And what about if you have to write a get? How do you write a get? Which names do you put in the get? How do you spell these names? These questions were, as often I would say, as the shaylas we have today, are you Jewish, are you not Jewish, the right of return, one Jewish grandfather, it's not the mothers, it's the fathers, the grandfathers, day in, day out, but they didn't have to deal with these shaylas. The Marashtam, during his time, day in, day out, had to deal with these shaylas. And the Marashtam, paskins lahalacha, 100% Jewish, total Gentile names. Don't be overwhelmed. This is life. He quotes the Gemara in Gittin, and I did the Gemara rather quickly, but you can spend the whole week on that Gemara. Was it the non-Jews, the Jews, outside of Israel, in Israel? But halacha l'maisa, you see it was prevalent. Now, what question does this raise? What are we dealing with here? The Marashtam and the Maramshik. No, who do you follow? One is an Achron, a Talmud of the Chatam Sofer. One is Gadol Mirabin Shemei, one of the great Spadik Rishonim. Who do you follow? But there's a deeper question here. The Cairo Geniza. What's the klal in halacha? And again, I'm going to be very brief when I'm touching upon. I'll give you sources. You can spend a good few years on this. But first, let's introduce it. What's the basic klal in halacha? Halacha kabat ra'i. Once we're finished with the Tanayim, perhaps the early Amorayim. But from that point on, we always paskin like the last authority. Why? My dear students, Yiftach bedoro kashmul bedoro. Ein lecha, how does the pasuk in Shoftim say, Ela kohanim valavim sheyiyu, Bayamim Chachem, correct me if I'm not quoting the pasuk exactly, but Yamim Chachem. We can't go back in time. Imagine someone asked me a shaila on Yantiv Sheni, and I paskin what I paskin, and this person says, well, Rakefet, who is he, what is he? It's Johnny come lately. Let me go to Rabbi Akiva's grave in Posen, and I'll ask him the shaila. You can't. We ain't lanu chachomim ela masha yesh lanu. Ain't ledayin ela masha inot reuot. I can quote a lot of my Mari Chazalan, but you all understand what I'm saying. We're alive. This is what we have. But that concept, halacha kabat ra'i, is predicated on one principle that they saw. The earlier writings, that the Maramshik saw the Marashtam. There's only one problem here. The Marashtam only became available in the Ashkenazic world as a result of Eidot HaMizrach coming in contact with the Ashkenazim, which the State of Israel engendered, and because of printing. Otherwise, no Ashkenazic posek held the Marashtam in his hands. And here you have the critical question. Cairo Geniza. I don't have to tell you. The world went berserk when they discovered Solomon Schechter, the people who went, the people who financed him, buying, taking out, bribing the Shamas, getting it out of Egypt, the donkeys that carried it to the boat. Tens of thousands of little pieces of parchment. What if you find a new Psak of the Rambam? What if you find a new reading of the Rambam? Wow. How does it affect the halacha? Psikresha de lo nichale, de nichale. How do we paskin? Midasek, einu mitkavein. Halacha la maisa. A new shita. And I need not tell you, this becomes crucially important. And it's not easy. How do you view it? How do you view it? I'll tell you two stories out of my life. And made a big impression on me. I wish I would remember Shasim Poskim like I remember incidents that happened. But when I left Lakewood, came back to YU, I mentioned to you I had 2 years I studied with Rav Shmuel Leiservolk. Those were two very fascinating years. It'll show up in my lectures on the East European Yeshivat. And we were learning Baba Batra with Rav Volk. And suddenly, a Meiri came out and Baba Batra. And I remember I was a poor kid, but I saved up. It might have been $10, which is a fortune of money. And I bought the mirror. It was a big, big Meiri, I recall. And we bring it into shir. A few of us had a Meiri. Myself, Melvin Zalewski was a classmate of mine in that shir. He's a serious learner, too, doctor, a medical doctor afterwards. And we were discussing something in shir. And we quoted the Meiri. And Rav Volk, and we showed it to him. And Rav Volk pushes it away. Do I have to translate? We didn't have a Meiri in Tells. And I'm not looking into a Meiri now. You understand? Barak, when I learned in Lakewood, they convinced me the Torah was given in Yiddish. You understand? And I still believe it until today. Sense of humor, please. Okay. But could you imagine? And he wouldn't look, and Reb Shmuel wouldn't look at the Meiri. I can tell you an incident many, many years later. I'm teaching in Michlala, a very postgraduate class, and one of the students that came to my class for years was a lady who was the very famous lady. She was the librarian at the Knesset, the library at the Knesset, any chaver Knesset, anyone. She knew more than anyone. Geveret Katan, she has very famous children. She's no longer alive, her husband's no longer alive. They married in France, they were French Jews, and it was, she told me, people said, you're crazy for getting married, Hitler is coming, and they wound up, I think when they died, they had hundreds of direct descendants. There are many Katans, rabbis, and women, and she was my student. So I told the story in class. She got so upset. She said, Rebbe, what was the story? It actually happened. After the Rav's wife died, so during the summer, he was, I would use the word, when he was teaching Torah, he forgot his heartache. When he wasn't teaching Torah, he was overwhelmed by heartache. So there were some very good people in Boston, and Mrs. Feuerstein particularly. We spoke about her husband last year in the Monday class. She arranged for Talmidim to come up with the Rebbe and study with him on the lawn of Maimonides. It was cool. And these Talmidim came. And then at the end, there would be the Rabbinical Council of America, the Arche Kala. There would be 3 days of lectures ending off the summer, geared for the Rabbanim, and they would come up and they would arrange hospitality for them. It was really a terrific chesed and Talmud Torah. So many holes, I mean, I'm telling you how I'm alive and kicking, Rabbi Holzer, you know the story, I write about it in Washington. So he would feed me tapes of the Yache Kala. And it was, I would get so lost in the, I would listen so intently that one time I actually asked a question. Could you imagine how stupid I am that I thought I had to realize I'm listening to a reel. I'm not listening to the Rav. But they were so clear, and I even remember until today the question I shot at the Rav. But it's not for now. So while this is going on, the Arche Kala has to be 74, 73 perhaps. So the Rav, you know, he did, like I haven't mastered a computer, he never mastered Xeroxing in it. I don't even know what it is, and photocopying. So he would always have to ask for Svarim. So he asks, I told this story years ago in the Kollel, he asked, bring me a Rambam Hilchas Shabbos, bring me a Rambam Hilchas Shabbos. And they bring him a Rambam, they pass it up, and you can hear this on the tape, and he opens it up and says, nay, nishta zei, chtaf avashiv a Rambam. They passed up to him a Frankel Rambam. The Rambam, the first Rambam of Frankel. I should go, wow, Barak, you know a lot. I see from your face you have background. Kala Kavod. The first Rambam that they published, Frankel, was Say De Moy, because everyone, it would sell. So you can tell when this happened, by, I think it was 73. And they passed up to him that Rambam. The Rav couldn't handle it. He said, Nein, ich will abashiva, bring me an old-fashioned Rambam. They brought him a different Rambam from the Maimonides. Ah! And you hear him say, oh, das kenne ich ja, ja. Das is good. This is good. And I remember Dr. Cutten, Geveret Cutten. She was related, by the way, to Mrs. Bentheim. She'd live and be well. These are great, great, great people. Ilse Bentheim. So I remember she said she couldn't handle it. How could the Rav... Not, you know, everyone was so excited, the Frankel Rambam, we have a Rambam with Gigi, that is Duyak, and there's Shinui Nischot, and there's references in back to Achronim, etc., etc. But you understand, humans are humans. It's very hard. If you grew up in Tells, and you grew up in Brisk, and you grew up in a certain way, very hard to handle new material. Now, imagine something is discovered, something new. Does this affect the halacha? How do you relate to it? This whole concept, halacha lebatra'i, that Aaron Rakefkit can paskin a shayla, is because we assume that Rakefet is not stupid and he's not going to answer a question on Yontif Sheni unless he knows the Gemara, unless he knows Rambam, unless he knows the Psak of the Shulchan Aruch, unless he knows Achronim, unless he sees what the Chacham Tzvi had to say, what the Chazon Ish had to say. But what about if a Sefer's discovered that no one saw before? How do you handle it? How do you relate to it? And I have to tell you, this is exactly what Rav Menashe Klein is saying. Kol hakavod to the Maram Shik. I bow before the Maram Shik. I stand in awe of the Maram Shik. But there is an open Gemara against him. But more than an open Gemara where you can be mafalkel and this machoikis rishonim and exactly what does the Gemara mean. But there is a marash dam that he never saw. And since he never saw it, it could very well be the halacha is like the marash dam. Here the concept of halacha kabatra'i does not apply. And this may very well be the psak of the Shulchan Aruch. And here I take you, this is a very famous Rama, Choshen Mishpat, Perek Chafhei, Sif Katan Bet. Chafhei Bet in the Shulchan Aruch, in the Rama. And here the Rama is dealing, how do you paskin shilas? It's in Hilchat Vayanim. And he summarizes again, you're looking in a Rama that summarizes many Gemaras. But he says, when you paskin shilas, Isa Veheta, Isa Dioraita, Yelech Lechumra. I Devad Rabbanan, Yelech Acha Hamekiel. That if there's a machlekes haposkim, safek deoraita lechumra, safek de rabbanon lekula. And all right, this is a klal gadol. It goes back to a gemara about the zara. This is the way we all understand that when you're dealing with a shaila deoraita, you have to shiver and shake. When you're dealing with a shaila de rabbanon, there's more room to be mekiel. Machlekes haposkim efsha lachakel. And then you look into the Rama, you'll see there's, what do you mean machlekes haposkim? Who do you follow? I remember when the whole question came up about synagogue council, so Rabbi Rachman, who was in favor of synagogue council, and here the 11 Rosh Yeshiva Asetz of Iraq and said, we're also rabbis. Oh, then the question comes up, are we all rabbis? Are all rabbis equal? You look into the Rama. There's a Katan, there's a Gadol. How do you follow? Who do you follow? Does the majority, do you follow majority? Can you follow a minority? What does it mean? Sapak the Rabbanan Lekula. And then the Rama goes into the whole concept I alluded to, halacha kabatra'i, that we always follow the last later authorities. But then he adds on, kol makom shedivrei harishonim ketuvim al sefer, vechein mefursamim. והפוסקים האחרונים חוקים עליהם, כמו שלפעמים הפוסקים חוקים על הגאונים, הולכים אחרי האחרונים, דהלכה כבטראי, מייבאיה ורבה ואילך. That if it's all written, it's all there, you know it, you have ability to access it, then the halacha is like the last authority. Aval im nimsa lafamim tshuvat gong. V'lo ala zichrono al seifa. You found the tshuva of a gong in the Cairo Geniza. And it was never published. V'nimsa achelim chokim alav. And some of the later authorities argue, Ein tzvichim lipsol kedivrei achronim, shepsha shelo yadu divrei hagon, v'i havei shemi elohu hadrei bohu. Had they had this source, had they known what this Gaon paskin, what the Rambam paskin, what this tshuva said, they may have never had their point of view. Had they seen it, they may have changed their minds and said the halakha is like that tshuva that just became available. And you see, if this Rama is correct, and we paskin like this, which we do, then you have a right to say to the Maram Shik, yes, you're 600 years, 500 years later than the Marashtam, but you never saw the Marashtam. If you would have seen the Marashtam, it could very well be you wouldn't have been as stringent. And this is Rav Menashe Klein. This is what he is saying. This is the way he thinks. This is the way the Pshat and the Gemara and Gittin would seem to indicate. We can't come out with a total abrogation, negation, nihilation of a Gentile name. All right? Could be later in life when your eyes open, you're not so proud that your name is Arnold Edward, but your parents didn't mean any harm. Look where they were raised. Look what the Bronx was like. Look, going back 83 years, what the environment was like. It's not sinful. It's not criminal. It shows where you're coming from. It can be accepted. We don't have to insist you change your name and make it more Jewish. Now, I want to give you one more source, because what I've touched upon is basic to Psak. And anyone studying to be a Rav, or anyone who is a Rav, without understanding the source I'm going to give you in a second, you really don't have the right to paskin. Okay. Open up your Adaya. Siman Resh Mem Bet. Hilchot Kavod Rabo. That's your Adaya, and it deals with Kavod Harav. It deals with Talmud Rebbe relationships. Following Siman Resh Mem Bet, there's a kuntres of the Shach. It's published, you know, it's the Shach, I would say an addendum would be the right word to Siman Resh Mem Bet. It's a kuntres of the Shach, Pilpul Bahanagat Horah B'Isa V'Heta. And it's called sort of pilpul. How do you paskun? How do you deal with she'ilot, questions that come up? And right after the kuntres, he has an addendum to that, kitzur b'hanagat hora'at isa v'cheta holem mikol ashas uposkim, that the Shach has 10 different rules that you have to deal with in Psak. And look at Rule Chet, Subdivision Chet. And he quotes exactly this Ramah. And he quotes exactly finding manuscripts. And here what's fascinating is he quotes a machloiket. It's not black and white. On one hand, it would appear from the Ramah, when you find the manuscript, you have to look at it seriously. And if you wrote an entire sefer and your viewpoint now is shifting because you found the manuscript, you have to change. Your psak is not good, even though you're the batra'i, but you didn't see the marashtam. You have to change. But he brings another opinion. V'yesh cholkim she'ein shomer, that when you find the manuscript, you're not allowed. You don't have to necessarily totally change your thinking. There are achronim, and it's a fascinating question. You find the manuscript, you don't find the manuscript. You find the manuscript, look at Rav Volk. Maybe it's a question, and now we come to Yomo's thinking. There's Hashkacha Pratit involved. Somehow what goes into the mainstream is there. You can't shoot the mainstream down just because 1,000 years later you come across a manuscript. It's not so simple. There's a lot of thought has to be involved in this. Chazon Ish, if you recall in the context of the Monday class questions my students asked me, Chazon Ish has one very famous letter to the Yehuda family, the Yehuda brothers. The letter is anonymous, but it turns out that later in life, one of the brothers wound up in Cleveland and his daughter was my student, and I asked, I suspected it was to her father, and he wrote me a long letter which later turned into an article in Tradition. And Chazon Ish is dealing with two brothers who have gone into academic research, Talmidim Mufhakim of his, but are now at university or post-university, and he calls them to task that their attitude towards Shas and Paiskim, that you're going to find new sources, says there's Hashkacha Pratit involved. What we have, we have. What we don't have, we don't have. So that you can see that there's a dialectical intellectual tension here. How do you relate to sources, manuscripts, Kitvei Yad, Genizes, know when to what can be discovered yet, what can be put together? Take a look what's happening in Israel with so many machonim working on new editions, taking Sfarim that did exist, didn't exist, manuscripts, Kitvei Yad, quoted by others from, trying to recreate, to put together. How much authority do we give? Is Rabbi Volk right? Or is the Ramah totally correct? You have to accept and look and be concerned. All right, I have to tell you, this is a very fascinating question. It has many different overtones. Din the Oraita, din the Rabbanon, traditional learning, academic approach. Halacha l'maisa, I reached the conclusion years ago that we don't overthrow the Vah Hashem Zu Halacha. There certainly is the Chazon Ish, certainly hits the nail on the head. There certainly is Hashkacha Pratit, that we reach this day, that we're here, that we're now, that we're learning, that we have these Sfarim, that this has been accepted. There's a whole world that precedes us, and that it took the faith shape and form that it did. Well, the Ribbono Shel Olam runs the world. Nevertheless, a Rishon is a Rishon. How do you... So I would say, halacha l'maisa, it's a sniffin psak. You know what that term means? I've dealt with it so many times. It's not the heart of the answer you're given, but it's a subdivision that adds to your thesis. It's a secondary reason, a secondary source that you can add to your thesis. It's like being mater in a guna. When you're mater in a guna, what we try to do is build sniff after sniff after sniff. Being mater a mamza, we try to build subdivision after subdivision after subdivision. Being mater using an automatic elevator on Shabbat, particularly to come down, you're putting together very yeshita tefishanim mitasek and psikreshe tolonichale v'chulu v'chulu. So I don't say you can dismiss it, but I feel very strongly you don't want to upset the major formulation, but it has to be taken into consideration. But let me reiterate, I want to introduce one more question beyond this year, but let me just reiterate. We're not finished with the tshuva. We have more to do and more to go, and I have more to say, but it's a very fascinating question. How much of the world around us may we absorb? We wear a kippah, and we put a baseball cap on the kippah. All right? Hasidim don't agree with this. They're going with a portable ghetto. The Litvish world, and I can quote Rakefet, and I can prove it 1,000 ways over, the Lakewood I learned in was totally different in dress than the Lakewood of today. The Lakewood I learned in, who wore a black hat? If you wore a black hat, I think they would have thrown you out. The only one who wore a black hat was the Rosh Yeshiva, Rabban Kotel. It was considered chutzpah. Reb Nosson, the Mashkiach, the Alta Mashkiach, Nosson Vachvogel, I can tell you, wore a brown hat. Remember distinctly. The Rav, you never saw the Rav with a black hat. He wore a blue hat or a brown hat. I can remember distinctly. Later years, when he was crippled, students bought him a hat. They may have put a black hat on him, but that was not the Rav. That was a creation of his later students. You are hearing the voice of a student who knew the Rav in his golden period. I'm looking at Rabbi Rubin. I can say about Rabbi Rubin, he knew the Rav intimately in his golden period. But this is a very delicate question. The Maram Shik, and it could be a result, and here I'm, you can see where I'm being influenced by two great scholars, Rabbi Professor Dr. Jacob Katz, Yaakov Katz, and his Talmud Mufak, my classmate, Hagrach, Dr. Grach, Harav Agon, Chaim Soloveitchik, Professor Soloveitchik. Could be I'm being influenced by them. The Maram Shik lived at an era where Torah was being slaughtered daily. And he fought hard, listened to the Sefer Chinuch. Keep your distance. The Marashtam lived at a time when Maranos were coming out of the earth and returning to God and Torah, to the blood in their veins. And he was a lot more lenient. And again, that Gemara in Gittin is very dominant. Next week we'll see a Rabbeinu Tam. We'll get involved with Yitzchak Plaza. It's the sources here are not chad mashmai, whichever way you want to look. But this whole issue, he didn't see the Marashtam. How does that affect the halacha? And that was the heart of today's shiur. Now, I want to just raise an issue. I have a student who just published a volume. Mussings of a Minionaire. It's not his first volume, I believe. It's his third volume already. He's very capable and he's very special to me because he's a son of a student. He's a student. His father, Harry Tzvi, Zichrono Livracha, was my student at BMT in the early 70s. And Rabbi Yehoshua Grinstein has been listening to these shurim maybe decades already. So he published this book. It's a lot of food for thought. I'll tell you what's involved here. He's talking about Corona and the outside minyanim. And you all know that we've had a sea change in how we daven. As a matter of fact, this Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, for family reasons, I don't want to spend the whole day in shul. I want to be home and available to help. So I'm davening, we're making a hashkama minyan at a whole rifka outside. It seems a year ago they had it outside. We had to have it outside. It could be this year too. It's many shuls are davening outside because there'll be too many people inside. So we've learned a lot of lessons. All right, we're beginning a quarter to six. It's a hashkama minyan. We've learned a lot of lessons and a lot has happened. And Rabbi Grinstein goes through the year and what we've learned and what the Balabatim are demanding. And the question is what we can agree with, what we can't. And some of the issues he raises are fascinating. I myself dealt with some of these in the rabbinate. First of all, our davening is too long. Shabbos morning, you daven, particularly in Chutzlar, it's 3 hours, 3.5 hours. There's talking, there's not enough dignity. Can we make the davening any shorter and get people to daven with more kavanah? So he deals with one of the questions of Psukei Dezimra. All of you know with Psukei Dezimra that if you follow the Rambam and if you've daven with the Yemenite minyan, the whole davening begins with the with Baruch Hu. Psukei Dezimra, you say in the house, so you say before the Zman of Tefillah, they get up and say Baruch Hu, and that's it, that's the davening. So it's one of the issues he deals with. Maybe like we abolished Kabbanot in Shul. When I was a kid growing up, everyone said Kabbanot. Find me a minyan that says Kabbanot today. Few and far between. So, Psukei Dezimra, interesting, raises this question. I'm not certain that the Balabatim will accept it. Psukei Dezimra, you know, there's a Lamda knows, right, the Rambam Shita. But Balabatim are used to Psukei Dezimra. I don't know if that will really be accepted. There's another question he raises, and I have to say, I'm with him 100%. Kriyat HaTorah becomes so long, not because of Kriyat HaTorah, because of the Mishaberachs. And where does it say you have to make Mishaberachs? And I remember when I'm in the rabbinate and when I'm building this Orthodox shul in Maplewood, South Orange, one of my first innovations was to have a Mishaberach Klali at the very end, not for each aliyah. Now, it's not so simple. At Balabatim, I told the Gabbai, if he insists, make a Mishaberach. There was one guy, an old-time Jew who is wealthier than Korach, had endless real estate. So he, Tucker, insisted. I told the Gabbai, give him the Mishaberach. But we saved a good 15 minutes, and it kept the davening more serious. So that's also food for thought. Then I want to say, and this already has come up, an article in the Forwards, either this week or last week, the sermon. How long is the sermon? And here you see, there were people who would come to shul, like to hear Rabbi Lichtenstein preach. That's all they were interested in, to hear Rabbi Young preach, to hear Rabbi Goldstein. The davening really wasn't their cup of tea, but the sermon. Today, I would hope that the davening is our cup of tea. Everyone is a day school graduate. You know Hebrew. You understand Hebrew. I hope you have some concept of what the davening, how it's structured. Psukei Dezimra, Kriyat Shema Birchotecha, the Gula V'Tfila. I hope so. If not, you have to give courses in the rabbinate and teach your Balabatim. So, you see, with the sermon, could be my idea with the sermon, the ultimate idea is that perhaps the rabbi has to say something limited to 5 minutes. The idea of a sermon, I say, is to teach. And you can't force people to come to class. It makes a lot more sense after davening to have kiddush, and whoever wants can reassemble. And then the rabbi can give a class, can do something constructive for 18 minutes, 20 minutes, up to a half hour, I would say. It's food for thought. But Mussings of a Millionaire, highly, highly recommended. It's a lot of food for thought. And I give Rabbi Grinstein all the credit in the world. Now, just let me see. I'm very bored and I'm frustrated. I have a lot I would like to give out, but I need people here. Yomo, can you pass this to me? If anyone's interested in anything I'm showing, you can take it now or stick your hand out of the computer or come tomorrow. These are our Torah. This is from the big, famous yeshiva, Rabbi Mazuz, in Bnei Brak. And it's a very interesting yeshiva, a very interesting hashkafa. They're chatsi avadim, chatsi ben chorin. They're one half shas and one half much more closer to chadalim. If any, and very interesting topics are discussed here. I quoted to you with Rav Ofadia, with the whole question of Mamzerim. I find it very fascinating. Barak, when you go shopping in Israel, it's a little bit different than America, and Rami Levy gives out these Sfarim, Chinam Ein Kesef. So I have copies here. My wife said, what do you have? Maybe someone on the call is interested. This is Shabbat. Bahalacha u'ba'agada. It's very beautifully done with all the avat malachat, contemporary problems, Ashkenazic psak, and also psak for Svardim. If anyone wants this issue of tradition, it's the spring 2021 issue. Very interesting articles. There's an article here by Eitan Holzer, Rabbi Doctor, my student. Brilliant, brilliant article on Akdamot. He is really very special. And if anyone is interested, Batches of Jewish Action, which has turned into a fabulous, fabulous production. And they also have a lot of material on Corona. And if anyone is in artillery in the army, this is the booklet, the Yachon, the Alon. They pass around to people in artillery. This is Chag HaPesach of this past year. Also,
it's Tutachal.
It's what? It's what?
Tutachal.
I can't hear two.
Tutachal.
What does Tutachal mean?
Super. That's an Israeli expression. Like it's like super.
Super. All right. Thank you for teaching me an Israeli expression. I'm glad to learn. All right. Tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem, we pick up exactly where we left off. We're finishing off Reb Shlaimala, and we go into Meir Kahana. And these are very, I'm modeh l'Kadosh Baruch Hu that I'm privileged to give these lectures. I feel like I'm paying back a debt. I'll put it that way. I'm doing a debt. You might want to look at it a gemilat chesed. And it might even be a chesed shalemet, which is the highest form of gemilat chesed. Let me just mention the coming up schedule. Tomorrow, regular class. Next week, there are no classes. It's right before Rosh Hashanah, and we're all overwhelmed with the preparations. Before Yom Kippur, there'll be normal classes, Sunday, Monday. Yom Kippur is Wednesday. And then we have no classes. The Kola will pick up again the Sunday after Shmini Atzeret, the Sunday after Sukkot. Be'ezrat Hashem, we will pick up. And then we run straight right through Hanukkah time, and I hope we can accomplish a great deal. Are there any questions on this side of the ocean? Okay, so let me just say to the classroom, until we meet again, health and happiness, tats v'danya. Yomo, open it up to comments around the world.
Thank you, Rabbi Rakefet. It's really wonderful learning with you again, and be well, and Shana Tova to you and your family.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Michael, and just best regards home. And
thank you.
At our age, underline the word health. That's
our Benjamin had a healthy little boy.
Oh, mazal tov, mazal tov.
Thank you. The brief was it was a hard pregnancy, but they got through it, and the breed was Thursday in Ephrat.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. What's the name of the baby?
Very blessed. Daniel Meir.
Daniel Meir. All right, that's a nice, conservative, traditional name.
Right. That's what he wanted.
I'm getting a lot of new names. I'm getting into my family. My next granddaughter-in-law, Shifa, from Lashon Shefa. So Baruch Hashem, but there's no
very
problem.
Nice.
It's not a Goyish name. Yeah. Anyone else? Go ahead. All right.
I got one more question for you.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know the writer, the woman writer who writes biographies, Judy Levy? She written a number of biographies.
What has she wrote about?
She wrote Koufax.
You're talking about baseball. I thought you were talking about Gedolei Yisrael.
Baseball.
Yeah, right. I'm the one who gave you the Koufax book, of course.
Right, right. The Koufax book is amazing. Have you seen the Mickey Mantle book by any chance? Someone just told me about it. They said it was excellent.
No, I have not seen the Mickey Mantle book. But, wow, I've read more about Mickey Mantle. It's, we can talk about the Yankees now with a little dignity. They won, what was it, the 12 straight?
14 in a row?
They lost. They lost last night.
I think it was 13 in a row they won.
Did they ring 13 or 12? Could be. But they lost last night. But But Aaron Judge hit a home run in the ninth. He brought it to within one run. So, all right, maybe I can take back my membership in the Bronx in dignity.
We're rooting for Boston because of Chaim Bloom. He's a Philadelphian, a Kiva boy.
And he's a Shomer Shabbos.
He's the general manager of Boston.
Right, and he's a Shomer Shabbos. I mean, that's...
Right, Shomer Shabbos. It's his mother was the son of a rabbi.
Ah, beautiful.
In Boston.
And I have to say, with all my reservations about the new government in Israel, Bennett's appearance in Washington was a Kiddush Hashem.
I think he did a great job. Kiddush
Hashem. The picture of him davening, there was Talis and Tefillin. So there was one Chiloni wrote in, I quote, "I'm a Chiloni, I'm not from," but he says, "I was very moved by the picture of Bennett preparing for his meeting with the President of the United States, davening." It made an impact. But not only that, the Shabbat, if you saw the video of the preparation and the women lighting licht in the hotel, oh God, give us strength. We should live to see 99% of the Jewish people like that. That would be fabulous. We have a lot of work ahead of us and the Yinah Machloket, but it's a Kiddush Hashem.
White House came up with a nice kosher meal for him?
Oh, yeah, no. What White House? Chabad came up. They had a glad kosher meal. They had a Sudat Shabbat, Kedat V'Kedin. Their pictures of the dessert table on the, I saw it, I think, in a Rit Sheva, but it's probably all over the internet already, a Rit Sheva, Yeshiva World News. And my wife said, "Wow, that looks good. That looks good." No, but kosher food in the world today is not a problem. Wherever Chabad is,
I'm sure not.
It's not a problem. We have a lot to be proud of. All right, you're almost signaling to me to end off. There's going to be another class late until we meet again in health and happiness. See you tomorrow.
Thank you, Rabbi. Das v'danya. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your good words.